Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, welcome back to the First Cut Podcast. My name is Kyle Porter. I'm here with Mark Immelman. Mark, it's really hot where you are, where I am. It does not feel like fall golf has started taking place. Is this just an extension of summer golf? What's going on?
I don't know, man. This is fall in name only. Fino is my new term for this. It's ridiculous, man. And the cool thing about the thing, though, we had the Greenbrier last week, and I was part of the call. You saw some changing in the leaves there in White Sulphur Springs, but the temperatures were still hot and sticky.
Yeah.
Where I am this week in Columbus, Georgia, it feels like the dog days of summer. And even the dog, I'm looking over at my dog sitting in the studio. He's like, whatever. And he's just chilling next to the air conditioning. So it's rough. And you know, it doesn't feel like the fall. And it's, if nothing else, as you point out, it's sort of ruining some football weather as well.
Yeah, it is. Speaking of Greenbrier, Joaquin Neiman gets his first PGA Tour victory. I was super impressed. You know, he is somebody that I've kind of been on. Me and Chip have talked about him a lot because everybody brings up like the, you know, like the Justin Thomas and the Jordan Spieth and even somebody like Bryson. And you're like, oh, these young stars. And it's like, well, I'll give you somebody who's like an actual young star. This guy's 20 years old. I mean, the list he joined of guys that have won on the PGA Tour before turning age 21 is a joke. It's Seve, it's Rory, it's Tiger, it's Phil. I mean, it's an unbelievable list. What was your big takeaway from Greenbrier over the weekend?
Well, it's for me, I think it was the realization of what everyone kind of knew, to your point. I mean, this kid, you know, former world's number one amateur, one Latino American amateur to get into the Masters. And that's where the first time I saw him. And to be honest with you, it was the Sunday I got to Augusta National. It's always a day before the event when, you know, you've got drive, chip, and putt in the morning, and the family's having fun. And then in the most of the day, the afternoon, you know, members and guests still go and play the golf course. And some of the players play, and they get a sighter. And I always catch up with Mr. Gary Player. He plays around there. And so it's neat to be out there. And I made a point of going to watch Jocko Neiman play. I'd heard so much, and I was suitably impressed. And the thing about him that impressed me more than anything else was not just the prolific game. It's just the fact that he just had a real old head on some very, very young shoulders. And the decision-making he showed, even in the practice round, the way he went about, you know, carving out time around the greens and focusing on areas that needed to be focused on, was just, you know, well beyond his tender age. And so he jumped to my attention then, and then obviously turns pro and has the banner start to the career. And then from there, things waned. And I always grade a golfer, Kyle, by how good the guy or the girl is when things aren't going well.
Yeah.
And he dealt with that very easily. And the next thing comes through with a decent finish to the end of last season and shows up at the Greenbrier and sort of plots his way to a very, very well-constructed, well-put-together victory. And if things didn't come easy, you know, he didn't drive the ball that well in the final day, but when the chips were down, he brought his stuff and he showed off his quality. And so I think it was a long time coming and well deserved. And I look forward to what the future holds. But I guess to your question, yeah, he's legit, man. He's at 20, I would say he's as accomplished as any.
Yeah, he is. And I'm looking at the former number one amateurs in the world. The track record here for guys who spent a lot of time at number one, it's pretty good. John Rahm holds the record. He has the most total weeks as the number one amateur in the world. He spent 60 weeks as the number one amateur. Then you got Patrick Cantlay, 55. You get on Peter Uihlein, 49, and then Neiman is fourth. And the world amateur rankings were only constructed, I want to say, like 12 years ago, 15 years ago,
yeah,
something like that. So they haven't been around forever. But, I mean, the names on this list of guys that did it for, you know, more than, let's say, 30 weeks, Ricky Fowler, Ollie Schneider-Johns, Maverick McNealy, it's a really strong list. And I think there are some takeaways from there. When we're talking numbers, though, the numbers that I go back to, so last season on the PGA Tour, he was, I think, 24th in strokes gained tee to green. He didn't putt well. And that's, you know how I am with that stuff. I'm like, I don't care if you're putting well. If you're that strong from tee to green at the age of 20, I went back the previous season. So it was the season he turned pro, and he didn't have enough starts to qualify. Mm-hmm. But from tee to green, if he did have enough starts, he was like top 10, top 12, something like that. So he has proven now for over 2 years that he's a top, you know, 20, 25 ball striker on the PGA Tour. And if you're that good at that age, it's almost hard to not have a really good career. Now, who knows? Maybe some of that falls off. Maybe you get hurt. But I just think his trajectory is really, really good.
Yeah, well, look, to your strokes gain number, that season, let's not forget, he earned exemptions into the U.S. Open and the Open because of his victory in the Latino America, but forfeits that to turn pro.
Yep.
Goes to the Valero Texas Open in 2018. That's a very demanding golf course, that Oaks course there in San Antonio. And he finishes sixth there. His first tournament as a pro, okay? So, and he's part of the mix. And then he earns the special temporary member status, and there's not many folks that have done that in his few starts, and then just for good measure, goes down the road there to Jack's place at the Memorial and finishes tied for sixth there. So he had a torrid start to it, and I think that just backs up your numbers. You know, hits the ball beautifully, puts himself in position, makes putts. You know, he's a bit streaky. But you got to put that all together. And to come out and start as well as what he did, under all that pressure, sort of wide-eyed, bushy-tailed, all that sort of stuff going on, and then still deliver, and that speaks to who he is as a golfer. And so statistics measure up, and, you know, those immeasurables to a certain extent, they certainly are in abundance with Jacko and Neiman.
Yeah, and in 2018, he actually earned temporary membership, yeah, and then he earned full membership based on those sponsor exemptions. And the only guys in recent years to do that before him had been Rahm, Spieth, and now this year it was Morikawa and Wolf. So, I mean, you keep talking about these circles that he's, these names that he's among, and it's like, well, all I know what to do with that is that he's going to be really good and potentially a star or superstar. So, I don't know. I think he does get, and I've been bummed the last couple of years that he's got, I just think he's gotten lost among the conversation. So maybe that changes with his win at the Greenbrier. I wanted to touch on,
if I could, yeah. You mentioned the conversation. You make a really good point there, because I think the only reason why he hasn't been talked about is because, look, let's be honest, he's playing on the PGA Tour, and you've got all these young American stars coming up, and they're grabbing the lion's share of the attention. A young man's from Chile. You know, he's not very vocal. He's on social media some, but he's hardly got a Matt Wolf following, if you will. So, you know, he's just sort of done his golf thing. So I feel like now that he has won, now people might start to pay attention a little more, because previously he was just some talented young kid who didn't go to college, made it onto the tour, and had a few top tens, you know?
Yeah, no, I agree. I want to touch on a couple of international events that happened. So Solheim Cup over the weekend, I know you probably caught some of that, at least saw the highlights. And then BMW PGA Championship, which is upcoming this weekend at Wentworth, the European Tour's flagship event. Let's go Solheim Cup first. Just mm-hmm. how good was it, the putt from Suzanne Peterson and the celebration? I mean, I said this on Twitter, but the celebration was like, it was the best celebration. People were throwing like Tiger at the Masters at me, which was really good. But it was one of the best celebrations I've seen in the last 10 or 15 years in golf.
Well, yes, and the angle, the track I took into this was just the timeliness of it all. You talk, yeah, and this guy, he made putts when he needed to, and it's a skill that very few have. Jordan Spieth's got an element of that, and all the great champions sort of do. Jack Nicklaus, obviously, also. They made putts when it meant something. And not to make a putt is hard, okay, 10 feet or whatever the length was. To make a putt left to right for a right-hander is a click harder. Then you add to the situation the pressure of all this, all right? And that final green there at the Glen Eagles course, the King's course, I believe it is, it's this massive amphitheater. And you've got this huge hill that surrounds the green. And so you feel like you're in this bowl, if you will. And you've got all and sundry on the hill there, both teams, all the fans. It's down to you. You probably know it because Bronte Law has just polished off her match on 17. So you get up there and you deliver. I mean, this is the stuff that kids practice on the putting greens when we're like 5, 6, 7, 8, 10, 12, 13 years old. So that for me was the big deal. And then to add to that too, Suzanne Pedersen was picked by Katrina Mathieu. And there was a lot of blowback about that selection. You know, most folks said she hadn't played very much. And when she did play, she wasn't very good. And I'm not so sure about this. And there's a certain element of, you know, sisterhood going on here. And we question the selection. Well, how about taking the big finger and going, whatever. You know, I stood up here and I did what Captain Mathieu picked me to do.
Yeah.
One of the anchor matches, and I was the one that delivered when it meant something. And so from that angle, I'm like, man, Suzanne Pedersen, that was all sorts of class. It was world class, and it was just so cool to see. And further than that, I mean, those matches were so nip and tuck. At one stage, it looked like the United States had the thing locked. And all of a sudden, it turns on basically a dime, and stuff had to go Europeans' way, and it did somehow, and it was a crazy cool event, finished in a way that I couldn't have imagined to be any better.
Yeah, I think one of the big takeaways for me is just more team events, man. Like the team stuff is, I mean, I find myself every May with the college stuff, you're like, I don't know who's on, you know, Washington State. I don't know who plays golf there, but I'm in. Let's watch it, because they're so. There's so much emotion, and it's just, I don't know. I think it's awesome. And the Solheim Cup is great. I did see people joking that Julie Inkster should be the captain for the Ryder Cup team, which may have gone better for the Ryder Cup, for the men's Ryder Cup team, than it has in some of the past years. Not all of them, but some of them. I just love that stuff. I think it's phenomenal. And, you know, we could talk for hours about just the players that really kind of rose to the occasion, and then the players that didn't. I don't know. It was a really cool event. Had one of the best endings, maybe the best ending other than Tiger winning the Masters of 2019. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was pretty great.
I must say this too. You speak about the team environment, and I'm a college coach also. And then we've talked about that Palmer Cup that I was the captain / coach of the international squad. And, you know, it wasn't like a finish on the last green that we had to win the international team. You know, there were people finishing at different times. But I'll tell you this much. It is hard, okay? It is difficult to put together your lineup. It's certainly difficult before that even to make the captain's selections. Everyone's like, well, the captain needs more picks. I got to tell you, captain, picks are hard, man, and because you can only be wrong.
Yeah.
If you pick someone and they play well, he's like, okay, well, that was expected.
Yeah.
But if you pick some lemon, you know, you've got to live with that sort of thing. And so lining up that team in order for the final day, and you speculating and you pontificating, and you're like, well, this and that, and who might play here? It's a tough gig. And so to the Julie Engster thing, to all the captains, I mean, I've got so much respect for them now. Previously, I would always be, well, the players just have to go out and play, which is the truth in the end. You know, players have got to go and play well, win their match, win their points. But setting them up in the right order, that is challenging.
Yeah, for sure. I did read – it is funny because you talk to players about some of this team stuff, and they just – I mean, they are never more nervous than they are during team events. I read this piece from Sean Martin today on Webb Simpson talking about the President's Cup. He said the President's Cup, and I think it was in Australia in 2011. Is that right?
Yeah.
In Melbourne. And he said that's the most like the first tee, and you know, we think about the President's Cup and you're like, yeah, it's a big deal, but it's not like we don't view it, I think, the same as like a major or like the US Open or I don't know. And maybe we should, but I don't think we do. Mm-hmm. And Webb said like, that's by far the most nervous I've ever, well, I don't know if he said by far, but he said that's the most nervous I've ever been because of how many people there are, because it's not just you. It's like all this other stuff going on. And I don't know. I think the team event stuff just brings emotions and different things out that you don't normally get at a golf event the way that we watch them. So I am all for all the team play that we can get.
Hey, the expectation sets anyone up for a fall, okay? And when you go there and then you've got your country's flag on your chest.
Yep.
You've got all these fans behind you. And you're just playing for one point. I mean, it's one measly point. It's the most important thing in the world. And I've been on the first tee at a President's Cup at Muirfield Village, which was manic. I remember I was interviewing Fred Couples, and the crowds were going crazy. And he just looked at me and goes, isn't this cool? And I was like, yeah. Nervous. And he sort of smiled and he goes, heck yes, I'm nervous. I mean, me, the guy holding the microphone, I was nervous and I wasn't even hitting a shot.
Yeah.
And you mentioned Webb quickly, just to close the, tie the bow, I guess, at Glen Eagles in the Ryder Cup. Remember his first tee shot off that first tee with all that pressure with a fairway medal, popped it straight up in there and the thing went like 100 yards down the fairway.
Yeah.
I mean, that pressure and the expectation and all of these, again, the immeasurables, they just ramp up the pressure to the biggest extent. And so I feel like, to your initial observation, it's got to be measured in the same way as what the major events are.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Okay, we're going to talk a little BMW PGA Championship. We're going to give our Sanderson Farms picks. But first, we're going to take a break.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Okay, Mark, I got two things on BMW PGA Championship. First, I saw this stat today, and I want to see if you can get it right. So I got this from Justin Ray over at 15th Club, the best statistician in the game.
There's no chance I'm getting this right, brother. If you team me up with that, there's zero chance.
This is incredible. I can't believe this is a real stat. The only player in the current top 50 in the world to not miss a cut worldwide in 2019 is who? The hint is that he's playing in the BMW PGA Championship.
Francesco Molinari.
That's a good guess, but no, that's not correct.
Okay, well, I was going to go Justin Rose, but he missed the cut in the Masters, and
yep.
I'm smarting about that one.
Yep.
And I know Rory missed a couple because we've covered him so much. So you've got me. What is it?
Tommy Fleetwood.
Ah, yeah. Oh, look, I don't. Well, we've spoken about this guy before, man. He just flies under the radar.
Yeah, he does.
Like, it's crazy. He shouldn't.
Well,
I don't know. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, he doesn't. He doesn't win a ton. You know, it's a little. I think the easy comp is like Ricky Fowler, right? So Fowler is like top 10, top 10, top 10, top 20. He has a bad week. It's like top 40. And especially during his good stretches, like he just doesn't miss cuts. And that's sort of how Fleetwood is, but they also don't win. But yeah, I mean, I ride for Fleetwood. He's awesome. And that's a really impressive number to go the places that these top players have gone in 2019 and to not miss a single cut. That's that's a real thing, and I think it's more meaningful than probably a lot of people give it credit for.
Well, you ask a lot of people, and you're speaking cuts made now. I don't know the number, but it is astronomical. You talk people about Tiger Woods, and you'll hear the 15 majors and the 80-plus tournament victories. You talk to all the players,
yeah,
and then you ask them, what's the most impressive Tiger Woods record?
Yep.
And they all talk to you about consecutive cuts made, because it's stupid. It's like in the 300-plus. It's absolutely ridiculous how many cuts he made in a row. And that's, you've got to be doing so many things right for so long. And not just the play, the longevity of it all. So making it through a season, playing in different sides of the pond, playing in different conditions, different golf courses. And that's a pretty cool stat for Fleetwood there.
Yeah, it is impressive. The other thing I got, we haven't talked about this. I want to give you the floor, give you your stage, give you your soapbox here.
All right, there we go.
Rory beats Brooks, PGA Tour Player of the Year. It came out, I think it came out like right after we – or maybe the day after we did our podcast last week, so we haven't discussed it. But there was a lot of consternation, a lot of hoopla around Rory beating out Brooks for PGA Tour Player of the Year. So the floor is yours, Mr. Immelman. What would you like to say about this happening?
Well, my response to everybody, because I've gotten a bunch of social media blowback. I think I said so on the podcast. I knew it was coming when I said to Chip, I'm like, don't go to sleep on McIlroy. He's got Brooks in a number of categories. The only one he didn't was in the four major championships.
Yep.
He's won at a canter in Canada, played beautifully in difficult conditions to win the Players' Championship, which is, with respect to all the others, the strongest field in the game. And then of course, wins the FedEx Cup. And my takeaway from all of this was the PGA Tour players who vote for this, they pay attention to all of the numbers, because we live in an age where folks are looking at your strokes gain metrics. And when they look down the list to find their name, and they click on to strokes gain tee to green, and they see McIlroy up there, and then they click on and they see McIlroy. Oh, goodness, he's 24th strokes gained putting now. That's an improvement from somewhere in the hundreds where it was the season before. And then they start to look at that, and that sits in the back of their head. And then, of course, we live in a FedEx Cup era. And all the players now, all the youngsters, it's about the playoffs. It's about majors, don't get me wrong. Don't get me wrong, but it's about the playoffs. And you go there and you win the FedEx Cup, you know, kind of the ultimate prize, I think the PGA Tour calls it, $15 million. There's a whole lot of benefits that go alongside that. And what he did is he was head-to-head with Brooks in the final group at Eastlake. You know, I think that was sort of the exclamation point on his season. And I had thought initially that if he wins the FedEx Cup, he may spark some conversation, but it was still Brooks to be had. But then when I started to look through the numbers, all of the numbers, he was better than Brooks. It was just Brooks was a major championship beast. And I don't know, if you had to ask Rory, would you trade that FedEx Cup for a Masters? He probably would. But all that being said, it was well-deserved, and it was an award that was given to him by his fellow PGA Tour professionals.
Yeah, and I think what you hit on at the end there is important, and I think it shows, like, I don't know if this happens 10 years ago or 15 years ago, you know, because I think that guys are just more locked into, and I would compare it a little bit to what happens in baseball. I think I've said this before, but guys winning the Cy Young, even though they go, like, 12-9 in a year, you know, as a pitcher, you're like, well, why that guy get the Cy Young? And it's like, well, look a little closer and see what he actually did in terms of his advanced numbers. And so for me, as somebody who likes that stuff and thinks it's important, I like that. I don't know. I could go either way on this. I get why he won it. I don't know that I necessarily agree, because I do think that, like, winning majors does and finishing where Brooks did in majors does still matter a ton. But I get it, and I like that there's the kind of the pendulum swinging the other way a little bit, because, you know, you go back 40 years and it's like guys from that era and guys that covered it and broadcast it, they wouldn't care about, like, strokes gain. It's like, what do you you know, we're, and you hear this from Paul Azinger a lot, and I love Paul Azinger, but it's like, what's in your heart on the back nine on Sunday? And you're like, well, maybe, or like, just what do the numbers say? I think it's both. I think it's a combination of both. And I do like that the pendulum is swinging a little bit back the other way.
Well, to that, you know, in a way, Zinger is right, and I respect him highly. To win an event on the tour, on the European tour, wherever, you have to be brave.
Yep.
To win a major championship, you've got to be extraordinarily brave. And, yep, it's a level that you and I and most folks listening to this cannot comprehend. I've been pretty close to it, but I couldn't comprehend what was going through my brother's mind. He tells me, but I couldn't live it. And as you know, living this stuff, when your heart is racing and your mind is going at a million miles an hour and all this sort of stuff, and people are coming at you. For me, the thing with the majors is it could be one shot, and that one shot could be a lipped-out putt.
Yeah.
At the Solheim Cup, it came down to one putt. You know, and you've got to be brave to make it. But you know what? If the young lady, her name slips my mind, do forgive me, if she gets up there and knocks in the putt before Suzanne Pedersen does, it's a different story.
Yeah.
So there's so many things that are brought to bear through it all. I think in the end, Brooks' season was fantastic. I expect more of the same from him. But in the end, it's the player of the year. I've got one more question. I want your answer for this. There were finalists, okay, of which Kuchar was one. Mm-hmm. He had him his best season, I think, in his career. How many votes did he grab, or anyone else? This is like a presidential election, just to dilute the field enough to kind of, you know, throw a wrangle in the numbers some.
Yeah, it is weird because you would like to see that stuff. I get why they don't release it. I would love to see it. My question is like, no offense to Kuchar, he did have the best season of his career, but like, if you're the PGA Tour, like, why even give guys the option? Why even put somebody like Kuchar? Like, is it even fair to either Rory or Brooks to put Kuchar on the ballot, right? Mm-hmm. Like, why would you give players the option of even diluting the vote, like you said? I don't know. I mean, whatever. But that if somebody voted for Matt Kuchar over Brooks Koepka and Rory McIlroy for player of the year, then we need to revisit some things, I think.
Yeah. Well, look, that individual, if it did happen, would have to live with themselves. I've seen this before when you got an axe to grind with someone, and that's the one thing about having a player vote.
Yeah.
You know the emotions that are lodged deep down, and they're like, oh, well, I kind of don't want this dude to win, so I'm going to just vote for someone else, or I'm going to abstain.
But everybody does that. Media does that. I mean, no matter who's voting, they have their biases. I mean, if you and I were voting, we'd be like, well, I'd really like this guy, and I don't really like this guy, so this is how I'm going to vote, you know? So I don't know. I think the player stuff does matter because those guys are so close to it. They get it in a way that I don't, because they've lived it, a lot of them. Not all of them, but a lot of them have been, you know, in the mix at a major or at least at a PGA Tour event. So, I don't know. It was really interesting, and I like that we're looking more holistically at the game of golf rather than just from a kind of myopic viewpoint. I think that's important, and I think it's important in the way that we talk about it in the future.
I completely agree with you, my friend. One thing, because I'm a friend of both of them. They're both great guys. They're both super champions. One thing is for certain. Whether it was Brooks or Rory, it is obviously Rory, the PGA Tour has a pretty good dude and a heck of a golfer to hang their hat on for the next season. They're both top quality.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Okay, it's time for our perfect finish presented by Amstel Light. Mark, I'm going to go first because I don't want you to steal mine. So if I'm taking yours, I apologize. But I've got somebody who is currently, you know, my favorite stat, strokes gained, tee to green.
Go.
Currently leading the PGA Tour after one event of the season in strokes gained from tee to green. Scottie Scheffler, Hook'em Horns.
He played. Oh, stop, man. Would you, one day, you need to choose someone that's not from Oklahoma or Texas?
He played great at Greenbrier. I think he finished T7 or T11, something like that. I think him winning, you know, I don't know if he's a, I don't know if he's a superstar. He was good in college. He was never like the Morikawa, Wolf, Hovland kind of mold. But he was really good on the Corn Ferry Tour last year. So I don't know. I think when we talk about some of these guys, he's a little older than some of them, but I think he flies a little bit under the radar in a different way than you know, when we're talking about Joaquin Niemann. But I don't know. I think him winning an early fall event and really kind of getting into the flow of things on the PGA Tour, I think that'd be pretty cool. So that's my perfect finish for this weekend at Sanderson Farms.
I like it. I'm going to sort of be romantic again. You know, I tend to want to do that when it comes to the stuff. And my Kyle Westmoreland thing for the Greenbrier didn't pan out so well, but I was romantic nonetheless. Going the college route as well. And there's a guy in the field who went to college in Mississippi, granted, wasn't in Jackson, Braden Thornberry, who is a stud. I mean, this dude can really go. A few years ago, I called him at the FedEx St. Jude then Classic. Finished top 10, and he just plays the game his own way. He's from Memphis, and obviously now playing in a big event now. It's a 500-point event, this Sanderson Farms Championship, the FedEx Cup points. So here it goes, because he can bash it off the tee, all right? He's in contention. The 15th is a drivable four. He hits driver on the green, makes an eagle there. That propels him to a super fast finish because he was in the mix and not leading at the time. So he goes with the eagle there and a couple quick birdies, posts a score and wins by one to get his maiden PGA Tour victory in Mississippi where he went to college. So that's my perfect finish.
I like that. That's a good one. That's a fun one. We're going to talk a little bit more about the Sanderson Farms, but that's been the perfect finish brought to you by Amstel Light. At the end of any round, you know what the perfect finish is. It's in a nice bottle of Amstel Light. Mark, one thing before we get to our picks, we'll skip the Cam Champ or the Cameron Champ stuff, just because he'll be talked about a ton this week. But
I've been waffling too much, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, that too for me. Akshay Bhatia, 17-year-old, just played in the Walker Cup. He's been I don't want to say a household name. He's not a household name, but he's been a big name in golf circles for the last couple of years. He's played in some PGA Tour events as an AM, but he's turning pro this week as a 17-year-old, signed with Callaway. You've been closer to this stuff in terms of like really young guys turning pro and just what all that looks like. What are your feelings and thoughts going into his kind of the start of his professional career here?
Well, look, he's a bit of a social media phenom, first off, which I think is why he's getting so much attention. I mean, I look on Instagram and the guy's got over 38,000 followers, which, you know, this is a high school golfer who hasn't been to college, is foregoing college to turn professional. So there's a little of that on the go. So a lot of expectation. I've never seen him play. I've seen footage. I've talked to George Gankis, his golf instructor. And so as a result, there's this cult kind of following around him. Obviously, he can play. You don't win by accident. He's had some really good victories. And he played at the USAM, played pretty solid out there. He can hit a long way. My only question for Akshay is, being so young, because I've been around young guys who turn pro, it's a big step from amateur golf to professional golf. And it certainly is a big step from amateur golf to the PGA Tour. That's a different level entirely. So it's not the hands and feet of it for me, you know, what the physical skill is, because he's got that in buckets. It's how do you deal with the off-course stuff? You know, what happens after the round, the aftermath, if you will. We saw it with Cameron Champ. We were going to talk about him. You know, he comes out, was okay in college, wasn't a world beater, but then wins early. He busts it off the tee like Bhatia does. And the next thing, he's on covers of magazines and there's all this other sort of stuff on the go. And that's tough to handle. You know, winning is hard, but dealing with that other stuff, that's something that nobody can prepare you for. And you've got to have a certain emotional quotient about you. And so Akshay, he's a good golfer, man. He can hit the thing. He really can. He's, you know, made a cut in the web.com tour and finished down the field some. Missed the cut at the Valspar earlier this year. So he's got the game. I'm just keen to see how, at such a tender age, he was born in January in 2002, for Pete's sake. I mean, how does he deal with all of the attention that is going to be heaped on him if he does, in fact, play well?
He was born in January 2002.
I mean, goodness gracious. I feel so old.
That's insane. That makes me feel old. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like we do this thing sort of retroactively where in 5 years, we'll be like, well, that was a great decision, or that was a terrible decision. And it's like, well, how does it stand right now? Like, is it a good decision for him and for his family based on all the information that he has right now? And it seems like, I mean, and there have been other guys like this, but he's fairly unique in that he's never really planned on going to college. So his entire career or junior golfing life has kind of pointed toward this.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think there's some advantage there, rather than like maybe you win like the US Junior or the USAM and then all of a sudden you get rolled out there as a pro and you're like, wait a second, like where's the tee box at, you know? So I don't know. I think it's probably a pretty good decision for him just because he's been thinking about it and pointing toward it so long, but you know, time will tell if he's successful at it. And if he's not, that doesn't necessarily mean it was a bad decision. It just means, you know, maybe he wasn't good enough to make it.
Mm-hmm. Well, look, he was the runner-up in the 2018 U.S. Junior. But as I look through the resume, he's got 4 wins as an amateur. You know, a bunch of the glitterati that he intends to go and beat and play against. Their amateur career was, you know, long and illustrious. And so it is a strange circumstance, pardon me, but he can play. And in the end, you know, when it all boils down to it, the golf ball doesn't know who you are and it doesn't know how many tournaments you've won as an amateur.
Yeah.
It doesn't really matter if you can bring it as a professional. And again, to your point and to, you know, what I was speaking of, how does he deal with all of this as a young man? And I think that'll define how he turns out as a professional.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, picks for Sanderson Farms. I'll go backwards. I've got Cam Champ as my sleeper. He's 50-1. He won here last year. Obviously, it hasn't been a great 12 months for him, but he still does the thing that you need to do well, or that is the most important, maybe better than anybody in the world. He's one of the best drivers on the PGA Tour.
Even do you know what he is, strokes gained tee to green?
Yeah, he was 6th last year. I looked that up. But his strokes gained everywhere else was really, really bad. Like, he was outside the top 150 in pretty much everything else. So
142nd strokes gained tee to green. And he's last on the PGA Tour strokes gained around the green. Yeah. He's going to have to find a little form.
Yeah, it's not great. And then top 10, Joaquin Neiman. I think I have a 20-week streak of picking the tournament favorite as my lock for top 10. So no surprises there. And then Brant Snedeker is my winner. His name kind of stood out to me a little bit as I was kind of looking over this field. He's got like 2 top tens in his last 3 starts. Been playing pretty good golf, and you know, this is a course where at least last year and traditionally putting has been more important than like for the winner than at a traditional PGA Tour event. So I think Snedeker gets an early season win on the PGA Tour.
I like that. Now, look, let's be honest with each other. I wasn't very sharp at this stuff last week. I picked Keegan to win, and he played pretty well. I said some players to watch were Christopher Ventura, who had a shock at the starts. I think I mentioned Sung J.M., and he was pretty solid. So I'm going for a top 10. I'm picking M again. He's the highest-ranked player in the field, and he looked pretty sharp out there at Greenbrier, so the game is there. So I'm saying Sung J.M. is a good top 10-er. My sleeper, I'm going with Braden Thornberry. He's going to turn a few heads, of this I'm convinced. And then winning this week, I'm a big one for opportunities. And I feel like golf is the ultimate game of recovery and opportunity. And if you can give yourself as many of the latter as possible, you're going to have the leg up on your competition. Now, Corey Connors led the PGA Tour in greens in regulation last year. I know it's not stroke gained approach, but he has hit the ball on the green a whole bunch, over 70% of the time. And he is just an assassin from tee through green. So he was a part of the mix last year, but for a frenetic finish, he may have won. So he likes the golf course. He's a greens and regulation machine, made it to the Tour Championship. So I'm going with a Canadian. My only concern is the temperature. So I'm not so sure someone from north of the border handle Mississippi. This event's a month earlier than what it was last year, and that's a big deal for the golf course and how it's set up and obviously how it's playing and the temperatures and such. So I'm picking Connors, but the temperature will be an issue.
Mark, I'm going to read you the top 10 on the PGA Tour last year in strokes gained tee to green. Number one, Rory, JT, Hideki, Adam Scott, Patrick Cantlay, Paul Casey, Ben On, Dustin Johnson, Corey Connors.
Hey, hooray for me.
John Rahm. He's super underrated as a ball striker. He's really good.
He is really good. He's really good. And he's won on a difficult golf course in the Valero Texas Open. Yeah. That course, man, you have got to hit it around that place.
Yeah.
And he finished that thing. So he's shown he can finish.
For sure. Okay, great stuff, Mark. As always, had a blast and enjoy the golf this weekend. A lot going on, BMW PGA, Sanderson Farms, hopefully some team events that I can watch online somewhere, and we'll talk again soon.
Yeah, you stay in the air conditioning, buddy.
Thanks, Mark. Talk to you later.
Bye.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. This Earth Week, you can live stream seven national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.